Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Caleb Monroe, who is an entrepreneur and strategist who has been serving the marketing industry for over 9 years. Before starting Monsoon, Caleb was the co-founder of Brand Native, a brand and web agency in Denver. In 2016, he, along with Travis Gibson, started Monsoon out of the back of his house. Caleb loves to work with Monsoon's clients to find growth points and bottlenecks that make an impact on their business. Thank you so much for joining us today, Caleb. It is really exciting to have you here with us today.
It's nice to be here, Julia. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So what really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur and agency owner?
What motivates and inspires me as an entrepreneur and agency owner? That's a great question. I think that what gets me out of bed in the morning is the freedom that comes with entrepreneurship of starting your own business. But also the ability to create an impact and serve so many other business owners. I have the joy of not just being a business owner, but being a part of a business that helps so many other businesses. So yes. Our bread and butter are small business small business owners, startups, these people that are just getting started, that are in this high dream phase where everything is kind of ethereal and they're dreaming about it and it's up in the air a little bit, and being able to like help them ground that and make it practical and really serve them. That's what I love doing in the morning. So when it says strategist, that's a lot of what I do is I sit down with clients and have actual conversations with them about where do you want to be in 5 years? Like, I know you think you need a website, you think you need a logo, you think you need these things, but let's first start with your culture. Let's start with how you want people to feel. Let's start with what's going to make you different than every other plumber in the city, every other baker in the city, you know? So we're an advertising agency that's very brand focused and brand first. We think that a lot of the decisions that we're making have to come out of a place of authenticity. So I love helping. That's what inspires and motivates me, is helping clients get that aha moment of, oh, this is, it's less about a service that I'm selling and it's more about who I am that's going to cause people to want to do business with me.
I love that. That's awesome. And then, so tell us about your story about starting Monsoon. I know you started working out of the back of your house. Tell me about, you know, why you decided to start Monsoon and then what it was like in those early days.
Yeah, I had a previous agency out in Denver called Brand Native, grew to several six figures before I ended up leaving the agency to move down to Lubbock, Texas to be close to my parents. I have, just so your listeners know, I have 5 kids. We're also foster parents as well. So big family, but wanted to be close to grandparents and do life with them and take advantage of these years that we have. So came back down just from a family move. And then got a job being a creative director. It was a pretty easy pivot point from, running an agency to being a creative director. I was incredibly driven. I think I stressed out a lot of the other workers that were there. It's kind of hard when you have an ownership mindset to step into an employee mindset and not seek to massively renovate and implement and change and cause things to be efficient. So, but after doing that for a year, I just kind of realized like, oh, no, I am just an employee. Like, this is just, even the good conversations that I would have with the owner of the company wouldn't necessarily yield change in things that I thought were important, or the ways that we were serving clients, or really optimizing the experience between it, where the work that was coming out from us was very cookie cutter, as fast as you can get it out as possible, just be efficient. It's much more about monetizing the agency than serving the client. And that began to really grind on me a bit. So I had conversations with Travis Gibson, our head of creative. He does all the logos and print design that we do for our agency. But sat down with him, our families were just close, and seemed like every single time that we got together, we were just talking about starting a company. So we ended up launching it in June of 2016. So we just hit our 6-year mark.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be honest, at the very, very beginning, it was difficult. We live in a city, especially Lubbock, Texas, is very different than Denver. In Denver, you can pick up the phone, call somebody, hey, what's your current guy offering you? I'll give you 10% off. You have a new client. Denver lacks a lot of loyalty, I would say. Just the business world moves very fast and people are just constantly optimizing. So it's very easy to break into that kind of a market. Lubbock is completely the opposite. It's all about relationship. It's all about loyalty. It's all about who you know. It's very resistant to new business coming in. People will trust who their uncle tells them to use over if you can prove to them even, hey, this guy's not doing well by you. That doesn't matter. They've used them for 20 years and they're going to continue to use them. So the only time business changes hands in Lubbock is either you develop a solid relationship with them or someone royally screws up. And so it's a bit of a waiting game and taking advantage of the opportunities that people give you and really over-delivering on people's expectations that will allow you to start that business. Yeah. And I think that it was really difficult on the front end, but that same resistance is now we have a loyal base of people that will always use us, that always enjoy us. So once we break into that market, the market's very stable, I would say.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So how did you break into the market? Were you just, you know, out there meeting as many people as possible in the early days?
Yeah, the early days, this is what's funny. We're a marketing agency that still currently does not do any marketing. And traditional marketing, when people think of like online advertisements, commercials, et cetera, our product speaks for itself. We have the best form of marketing, which is referrals that people will give us. And you can't have that kind of a model if your product sucks. So if you don't do a good job, people aren't going to tell you to tell their friends about you. So we more seek to over deliver on expectations, turn clients into mini evangelists for our brand, essentially. And that's kind of how we got our start, is that we took every small opportunity, whether it was a t-shirt design at the beginning. We didn't have a portfolio tied to Monsoon's name. I wasn't going to bring over everything from Brand Native that I had done that wasn't applicable. So just starting from scratch, it was a bit of a slog on the front end, just trying to earn people's trust and prove that we knew what we were doing and take full advantage and build websites, build logos, build up enough trust to do marketing. So, yeah, it was difficult on the front end, but it's now just a referral game, word of mouth, people that hear about us and heard good things about us. We get calls from people, hey, you came highly recommended. And I try and talk with them and I haven't even met some of these people that are recommending us now. It's just like, that's the word that's going out.
Oh, that's so interesting.
No. So, and again, I think it's very unique to the city that we're in. I don't think you could do the same kind of strategy in every major city. But I think that, that's a big part of just knowing where your agency's planted and who you're trying to target. For us, it's local, and for us, it's small business. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting. So, how do you differentiate yourselves from other agencies?
Aesthetics, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it's aesthetics and caring more about the client and serving them than efficiency. I think most agencies seek to scale. They want to be big. They want to grow and expand really quickly. And I think that they end up sacrificing, most agencies that I've met, most businesses that I've met, once they reach that scale point, they end up sacrificing the culture that made them great. When you have that CEO that's hands-on, that's down, that has that ownership mindset, that's in the field, interacting with clients and coaching his team and like you have a really solid culture that's being passed out when people interact. It's very authentic because you're the culture bearer for the company and you're down working with the employees, working with the clients. But as you scale and as you grow, your time becomes limited. And so as a CEO, how do you scale your business without losing that culture that made you great, without losing, you know, that hiring process? You're not the touch point any longer. If you scale up to a point where you're managing teams and internal systems and outward marketing, you're not the networking, you're not the sales, you're not the sitting there looking over a logo and talking about how this company is very aged, but also wants to be modern. And how do you keep a foot in each of those zones, right? Like you're not down impacting, and kind of raising the bar. So I would say that we are unwilling to scale and lose culture. It's not something we say no to a lot of things that would cause us to scale too quickly. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that if we scale, we're going to bring people forward. And that looks like a lot longer of a hiring cycle. That looks like a lot longer of training and teaching. And it's a little bit more discipleship-esque focused, where I'm going to sit next to you and we're going to like really take time instead of just pulling you in. Here's a project, blast it out. Mm-hmm. I really want you to understand who we are, how we interact with clients, how do we talk with them? And I need you to catch the culture and make sure you're a good representative before I will ever make you client facing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that people tell the difference between our website. This is what I just heard from a client this past week when I was talking to them. They said, hey, I looked at all 10 websites that are on the first page of Google when I searched Lubbock web design. And I went onto yours and there was a clear difference in the quality of your website compared to the others that made me want to work with you. She said, and then I sat down and actually read about your company and read about your culture. And that was a clear difference between it too. And so
that's cool.
I think the best way that we differentiate ourselves is we try and give away as much value as possible in discovery meetings instead of like carrot and sticking into a sale, mm-hmm. you know, where we're trying yeah. to just like give them just a trickle breadcrumb enough to where we feel credible, but and they feel like trustworthy. I just want to give away as much as possible. That 30-minute meeting that I have with a new client and brand new startup, doesn't matter if this person doesn't have money yet, it's just a dream. That person knows other people. That person's grandma could need a website, you know? Like I
yeah.
take every advantage for every discovery meeting to showcase as much expertise, give as much practical value. Here's what I would do if I'm in your shoes. Mm-hmm. And I think that people tell immediate difference. Our close rates are insanely high when someone comes into a meeting and sits down with us.
That's really cool. Yeah, you just get them so excited that by the end of the meeting, they just want to get started on the project.
Yeah, excited and seen, I would say. I think that we ask questions when we're building websites that other agencies don't. They're like, hey, I talked to 3 other people and I'm just, you know, you're the 4th company that we're trying to bid for this website. I'm like, okay, what do you need the website to do? Where's your business going in the next 5 years? Like, I need to actually understand your business and what's important to you. What services are you selling that are actually profitable to you? And what services are you selling that you kind of wince every single time that someone calls up needing the service? Okay, we need to structure our website to actually make your profitable services more prominent, make you an expert in this so that your business can actually grow. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I just need a website built. And I said, I wouldn't feel comfortable building your website unless I knew these things, right? So I think that even the way that we ask questions and approach them, and we educate our clients that if they ever went to somebody else, they immediately sense the quality loss because we took the time to educate them on what web design companies should be asking, on what branding companies should be asking.
Yeah, that's interesting. So whenever you're quoting a prospect, you're really just diving into that discovery, like putting a huge emphasis on that discovery phase as a way to stand out from other agencies.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you ask good questions and then you keep it open-handed with them where you're like, listen, if we're the best fit for you, awesome. Let's move forward. If you're the best client for Monsoon, great. This is a two-way thing. Let's both respect each other. I think that agencies get it wrong a little bit when they come in and they're so aggressively postured towards making a sale. I think that people sense that and they know that. My first business partner was very aggressively focused on just throwing whatever he could at the wall. You need Facebook marketing. You need a website. You need a logo. You need this. Whatever would stick to the final invoice, that's what he was after. Instead of actually, what do you need? And I ended up blowing several client discovery meetings because I was listening to them asking informed questions. And I realized pretty quickly, oh, you don't need an online marketing strategy. You need to actually go out into your chamber of commerce and boots on the ground, start building relationships. Like, and you should probably put your digital marketing dollars into a luncheon that you're going to throw and build value for people and build relationships. That's what you need to be doing. And we don't offer that, but I'll tell you it, you know?
Yeah.
If I give people what they actually, what I would do if I was in their shoes, sometimes it doesn't look like a sale for Monsoon, but the credibility, integrity gain that you have inside of the relationships that you're building moving forward is massive. And I've had people call me 4 years later saying, hey, I know you didn't make a sale with me, but the way that you treated me, I know you're going to be honest with me. And it brings people back because I think they're used to the sales game.
That makes so much sense. Yeah. And then, yeah, like you said, you're just building that trust, credibility with them. And then whenever they're ready, they'll come back to you. And chances are they'll refer you out as well.
Exactly. Yep.
Awesome. So I know you talked a little bit about your culture within Monsoon. So I'd love to just learn a little bit more about how you would describe your culture and then how you're really integrating that with your team. I know you do the one-on-one training sessions, but yeah, what that kind of looks like and how you're really fully integrating that with your team and the work you're doing and how that reflects to your customers as well.
Yeah, I think that when you're talking about building long-term culture, it has to start with taking care of your employees and over-incentivizing, because I think that if you, we get a lot of employees and requests from other agencies that describe the work environments as kind of a meat grinder. You're talking about graphic designers, web designers, you know, the reward for a job well done is another project. And there's not like a break point, a point where they feel taken care of or seen. It's a paycheck, and that's great. And you can run businesses that way, clearly. But I think that you're seeing, even in the middle of the great resignation that's happening right now, you're seeing a bunch of people push back on cultural norms of what it means to work in a workplace. And I think that a lot of CEOs are struggling right now with that. Part of the culture is, if I'm going to take time to disciple, sit next to someone, do one-on-one trainings like we talked about, I need to make sure this person is probably going to stick around. And how can I ensure they're going to stick around? I mean, you can't 100%. Stuff mm-hmm. happens, life moves, opportunities. But I want to craft Monsoon in a way that it is like a little city or kingdom almost, where it's so much better to be inside the walls than it is outside my walls. And how can I do that for the people that are living inside my company that are interacting in it? And I think that if I'm pouring in as a partner, as an owner, if I'm pouring into the people that are in my city walls, my people, my graphic designers, my creative directors, my marketing heads, if I'm pouring into them and asking them, what do you need to succeed right now? What's actually important? If I'm understanding what incentivizes them, I think you create a lot more stability. And it's not just being seen, it's offering real value, right? It's not just having these conversations like, hey man, what do you need? Oh, that's really great. It's emotional connection. That doesn't move the needle for a lot of people. So we, maybe 2-3 years ago, we started doing a 4-day work week, like long time before anybody else was. So Monsoon's closed every Friday. We're closed.
Yep.
And I will tell you, from talking to the people that we employ, that's more important than health insurance. Like, that's more important, like from a value add for a job, like knowing that every single week you have a 3-day weekend. What's crazy is we saw zero efficiency drop. Like, we saw no problems with projects, no problems with clients. We saw nothing. In fact, I think that personally, I feel like we have seen the opposite, where these people come back to work so motivated, and they work hard during those 4 days to protect that day off, right? And so you posture it like they understand the difference. And I promise you, as an agency, if you're willing to briefly train your clients that we're closed on Fridays, it's not an issue. They're not calling you up with an emergency. They're not calling you up with a problem on a Friday. And if it is, then I'll take care of it. I'm willing to shoulder that to make this be protected, you know? But I think that what ends up happening is that you have a creative director who has a 1.5-year-old daughter at home who now gets to spend Fridays, instead of her being in a daycare while his wife is at work, he gets to go just have daddy-daughter time.
Yeah.
Like, what does that do for him in terms of appreciation for the company culture that he's inside, in terms of wanting to stay, in terms of, you know, like, so just small things like that, where it's like, how can we incentivize our team mates and our, like, an actual employees to feel valued, to feel seen? So now you have these creative people who aren't burnt out on creative projects by the time they get to the end of their work week, because we're destroying them with the culture that we currently have, where it's just efficiency, go, go, go. These people have Fridays to now pursue anything they want creatively. They come back more inspired, more rested, more ready to go. And to be honest, I think that every single person that has worked any job, how effective, especially if it's a Monday through Friday job, like, how effective are those Fridays? Like, everybody's got this Friday mentality where we're just kind of like twiddling our thumbs and coasting, waiting until it's Saturday. You know, I think that what do you actually get done on a Friday? Little. So being willing to sacrifice that to protect this work home life balance, I think that even if they get a job offer that's 10 to 15 grand more, they're having to really, really think through and weigh through, like, but do I want to lose my Fridays? Like, that's why you have ways of actually incentivizing the relationship bringing actual value to where, and now the training, now the culture, these people are more stable. We're not seeing high turnaround because we're taking care of these people. And we build a lot of trust and not a lot of micromanagement inside of our company culture as well. So I think that my goal as we're building out team is starting small, which is the designers on the thing, moving up to a creative director type position where I'm pouring into that creative director and he's then carrying that same mentality down to his team. So that the brief touch points that I have with the heads in the departments then turns into them as heads of departments going and making those same touch points down. But that takes time to build that kind of a culture and that kind of an interior. But making that part of the success of our business is this designer is going to build a much better logo if they feel seen and taken care of personally, if they're not feeling burnt out, if they understand it. And I mean, to be honest, agency life is very, it fluctuates project by project. Sometimes you're in seasons where there's so many projects that you have to like get done and it's crunch time and people understand that. But then there's other seasons where I would say the period at post Thanksgiving to like January 1st is a big lull time for everybody. Clients, work, it's the end of the year. No one's really thinking about it. So what do you do with your people? Are you there forcing them to be there if there's no projects, or are you giving them complete freedom saying, hey, these past 2 months, I've seen you crush it. You have crushed it. And here's your reward for crushing it. Go work in a coffee shop today. Go take the rest of the day off. We don't have projects that need it right now. We're setting good expectations with our clients on when deliverables need to happen, that this is not the biggest priority. I've seen how hard you've worked. So do you have authority to like, my kid is sick and I need to go pick him up? Go. Like we value your faith, like go pick them up. Like we trust you to get this done, right? Yeah. Like you know what you need to get done. Life is organic and flexible and it's constantly in flux. And I think that to have this rigid requirement instead of just trusting people to be adults, I think it builds a different culture.
That's so cool. It's really, really interesting to hear you talk about your culture. Do you tie in your company values in at all? Is that something that you guys focus on?
Just to be on the same page in terms of definition, what do you mean by company values? What's your definition there?
Do you have like a set of values? You know, a lot of agencies will have, you know, 3 core values or 5 core values, and that's something that they kind of implement into their culture. Is that something that you guys do at all? Or is it kind of just, you know, generally taking care of your clients as best as possible? Or not clients, sorry, your team.
Yeah. Well, yeah, both. Right. I think that, I would just say like a servant mindset to really go out of our way and serve, whether that's serving the people in our department or serving the clients that are here, giving them the best possible option at all times and being unwilling to force efficiency, to cut corners, to cause quality loss. So I'd say that that's where we gear towards, but there's also the other side of that where, you know, there's a law of diminishing returns and I'm not going to spend another 30 hours into a website to get like a 2% bump increase to the quality that's there. Right. And it's being able to explain that to a client, but knowing that our main goal is to give them the best possible logo, the best possible website, the best possible marketing. And being willing to front load expectations and communication to where they understand the process so that they don't get disillusioned, I would say, a little bit by the process sometimes is has been kind of the goal. But from a value standpoint, it's I want them to come in and feel seen and served and appreciated as employees. And they're in turn going to take that and any whoever they're interacting with, they're going to serve and appreciate them. So if I have new creative directors, for example, we'll have discovery meetings where I'm going through a branding exercise that we've developed with a client and I make sure to pull in my creative director and one of the logo people, even though they're not there, they're there to listen, but these are, it's an actual branding exercise. We're discerning this small business owner's culture for their company. And that should inform the logo. I want the person that's actually designing that to be a part of it, to hear the business owner talk while I'm pulling out, like, what's actually important to you? Is it being professional or is it being relational? Like neither are negative. What is actually important to you, right? Is it, are you a business that's crafted for efficiency? That's great. Not negative, but it will impact the logo. It will impact your culture. It will impact what you authentically carry and the expectations that you set for your clients. So I need them to hear. We have about like 20 of them that we go through like that with each business owner before we ever do a business card, before we ever do a logo. We walk them through this branding exercise because we need to discern what makes them different. And I think so many people get it wrong where we've stopped focusing on services for the companies that we're talking about because you look at plumbers in your city. How many can fix a toilet? So many. But that's all they're talking about is that they can fix a toilet. But that's not actually informing a customer or consumer about what makes them different or why I should hire you. And I think that that's what happens with the culture and that's what happens with brand. If they are understood, oh, you are corporate facing, you know, business to business, you want to be doing big commercial plumbing jobs. You probably don't want to look residential. So why are we showing residential toilets, right? Like on your website, you know, like being able to sit down and have a full conversation about where do you want to take this and what, where are you wanting to go and what makes you different? That's all that goes into like before we ever design a logo for them, let alone website or marketing. It should all be informed by that brand.
Okay. Okay.
So a long windy answer for servant culture, just serve first and give them the best possible thing instead of just the fastest and most efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such an important aspect of leadership is just having that, that servant mentality, service mentality. And yeah, I think it's just such a great way to just grow your team and create a lot of loyalty at the end of the day.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a reprogramming process, just very briefly before we move on, where like we'll bring in a designer from another agency and they're used to just efficiency, go, go, go. And so we sit down with a project. We're like, listen, they're like, okay, how many logos do I have to do today? I was like, well, you have one logo to do today. And they don't understand how to like comprehend that. They're used to slamming out Fiverr style, just, okay, they're a plumber. I need a pipe, a water drop, and I'm going to do a bunch of different font stuff and I'm going to get it out the door. I'm like, no. Here's the full branding exercise. Come sit in on this meeting, learn about their culture. And I want you as a creative to actually, what do you think the best way to communicate that would be? And I want you to spend time on that, right? Like, yes, we make more money when you are efficient, but I want you to look at this and say, this is the best that I know, this is what they need. And so take enough time to do that. So instead of it being a 15-minute logo turnaround time or an hour-long logo turnaround time, we're usually like between 4 to 6 hours for a logo because we actually want to know that we're looking into the market, we're understanding the branding exercise, we're taking the time to do it. So there's like a little bit of a reprogramming when they come in where I get to look at them and say, is this your best work? Is this what you would do? Is this stretching you? Because when you put a creative, especially into a high functioning efficiency environment, they're just going to default to what's worked in the past and they're never going to innovate. They're never going to grow.
Yeah.
Like if it's crunch time, they're just going to, okay, this worked in the past, da da da. And everything begins to look very same. And if you want to be creative, if you want to differentiate yourself from other agencies, then you need to not kill creativity by demanding efficiency. You need to train your sales teams to set realistic expectations to allow creativity to thrive instead of, I told them that they'd have it tomorrow. Great. Well, they're having a pretty crappy logo tomorrow because you set that expectation, right? We need to force, you know, change that on the front end with good communication. But there's some good reprogramming that happens when we bring people in and they realize as a creative, they get to actually be creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interesting. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing Monsoon?
The biggest challenge, you know, weathering COVID was interesting.
Yep.
As an agency, I think every single marketing agency feels that and has felt it. We were lucky to have structured, not lucky, there's some good wisdom there, but a lot of our bread and butter were not big clients with high retainers, you know, that we just have two or three that we operate our agency off of. Whenever a recession hits, finances get tight, you know, you feel the squeeze on that. I'd say marketing retainers are the first things to get dropped from businesses that are looking to just draw in, you know, and I think we're seeing it a little bit right now, even in the economy, as a business owner, just kind of looking at how are people feeling? What is current sentiment amongst business owners? Because that's where my stability comes from. If my clients are stable, then we are stable. If they feel healthy to pursue marketing, I mean, how few business owners in general pursue and have a marketing budget? So I need those small percentage of people that actually market to feel comfortable in their environment. And a lot of those are factors that we can't control. But looking at current talks about stagflation and recession and a bunch of other, you know, economic things that are going on, it's we structured our business to have a lot of small monthly payments where we would spread out the website. Instead of it being a big upfront payment, we would take and spread it out over 1 to 2 years. So we were doing that in 2018, 2019. And we had people that were paying smaller monthlies instead of big $1,000 retainers, several $1,000 retainers for services. And to be honest, it carried us throughout COVID, but it was something that we had to plant those seeds a year before, 2 years before, to still be reaping those small monthlies.
Yeah, absolutely.
To where I think that we're more after building a smaller, high quantity base of people to create stability, that if one person's business fails, you know, it doesn't kill us. If one large bank decides to change their huge retainer that they have with us, you know, several six figure retainer with us, then like, I think agencies can get into trouble. And that's what we saw during COVID, was a lot of our agency friends who had clients who were big in the event space or hospitality space that they never even saw it coming. The fact that they couldn't operate, that they couldn't have people. What do you mean we can't have weddings? You know, what do you mean we can't? These huge event venues out in Denver saw so many people struggling because of just, you can't have them. So people aren't going to pay for them. So then people that had these larger retainers with companies that were trying to struggle through, I think that you saw a big agency loss happen across the United States because of COVID hitting. So I would say just navigating that. I think that we were very lucky to be local. Lubbock's pretty recession-proof. And a lot of our clients, because of the way that we structured the deals, it was okay. But from like a big struggle point outside of the beginning of our business, which I described, even like, you know, getting into the city that we're in and building trust and relationships and rapport to have that stability, I would say that, you know, weathering COVID and watching that all happen and take place, and, you know, 2020 hit the very beginning of it and everybody was like, oh, this will blow over by May or June, you know, like it's going to be very brief. And I think that, to be honest, it's 2022, middle of 2022. And I think people are still trying to go back to before COVID. And I don't think they realize that there is no going back to before COVID. I think what you're seeing from a great resignation perspective is that CEOs were holding their breath, waiting for people to come back to the office. You know, they're just waiting for work from home to stop. But when you have people work from home for over a year and a year and a half, and as a business, you've had to change systems like Zoom and implement a bunch of other things like Slack to cause people to safely be able to work from home. And they realize the freedom of being at home, and I can water my plants and I don't have to stare at a cubicle and I can see my dog and I can go on a walk between meetings. Like, I have autonomy. This is incredibly valuable. I think you're seeing the backlash of that when people are like, great, now it's time to go back. And so many people are like, I'm unwilling to sacrifice my morning coffee in my kitchen and in my space with my cat. Like, they're realizing that what's really valuable, it's shifted, and we can't go back. The closest thing I could equate it to is like, do you remember what airports were like before 9/11? People could walk you through security. Like, there was no security. People walk you directly to your gate. You could wave at the people as the plane took off. It was the airport was a completely different experience, right, than what you have right now.
And it never went back.
No, there's no going back after a moment like that. There's no going back after a national trauma. And I would say COVID was a global trauma. I think that you're seeing industry have to shift, have to adapt, have to quick pivot. But everybody quick pivoted. And now you have systems in place that people have gotten used to and appreciate and are willing to say no and go and find a different job over. And I think that the people that are still clinging to this idea of micromanaging their employees by looking over their shoulder and forcing efficiency, I think it's gone, and that idea is gone, and CEOs need to adapt to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was really great advice you gave about diversifying your clients on retainer so that you're not, you know, just down and out if you have a really big client on a massive retainer who decides to leave for whatever reason. So yeah, I think that's really great advice.
Yeah. I think if you're going to have a big retainer, that's great, but take all the money from that big retainer and put it aside. Like, don't scale your company off of a single big retainer or two big retainers or three big retainers, right? Where you're like, great, I hired 5 more people, 10 more people, 20 more people to fit these things. You're asking for you to have really harsh conversations with people when that bank realizes, hey, maybe your marketing efforts don't have the click-through rate that they were wanting and the leads that are coming through. Maybe they were unwilling to implement some of your things and you don't have control like you think you do, but you're now saying, hey, I'm going to pay you 10 people new salaries off of this. So then you're stressed, scrambling, trying to find a replacement instead. You know, I just think like you can do it that way, but I would literally treat it like it's non-scalable money. and build up enough of a nest egg to where you can look at a year and say, hey, I can make a commitment to 10 people this year because of the money that we've set aside. So that feels stable. We have a 12-month runway, right? But I think a lot of agencies go, great, huge client, huge retainer. I need 10 people right now. And then, you know, relationships change.
Yeah.
And that's what's dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you see Monsoon in 5 years' time?
Man. I see Monsoon in 5 years' time being the small business king. Like, I think that, I think we're gonna have to weather the next, I would say, year and a half. I think that, like, it's very important for me to understand, economics that are happening and, you know, national sentiment, because that will bleed down into clients. It'll bleed down into work.
Yeah.
And I think we're leaving a period, even in the middle of COVID, it still felt like people had hope. Entrepreneurship was thriving. This is the best time to go launch your own business. People were very industrial. You know, again, they're stuck at home, COVID. People started baking from home. They started doing cottage loss. Like, you see the sentiment of like, oh, I can do this myself. I need to innovate. And there's this hungry entrepreneurial innovation culture heartbeat that was happening even in the middle of COVID, where people were unwilling to do it. But I think that with rising gas prices and, you know, the cost of even normal things like deodorant and bread, like, you see these trends happening. It's like everybody's going, it's so much more expensive than it used to be. And when I'm encountering that in my daily goods, right, not just a business level, oh man, this huge $50,000 print machine I need for my t-shirt company is really expensive. Like, this is down to, like, I was in Walmart just buying something, and there's a lady the aisle over that was just like, deodorant's $9. And she like screamed it. Like, she screamed about the price of deodorant. And for me, I'm going, wow, like, I know it's one lady and you can take it in a moment, but the fact that we're at a point where even just normal people are feeling pinched,
yeah,
that does impact business.
Yeah, totally.
So it's just understanding where we're heading. I think, where do I see Monsoon in 5 years? I see, like, the next 1 year, like 12 to 18 months, literally weathering stagflation. And again, trying to just build up as much, like, low cost retainers where we fly under the radar of what is too much to bear for a business owner to pay.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of a recession. And I hope it doesn't have a recession, but I think planning that way. And I think that once consumer sentiment continues to increase, then I think that our game would be to continue to educate, get better at educating creatively small business owners and connecting to people, and actually leveraging it out to where we can be a pretty trusted source to help startups, I would say, people that are trying to launch new businesses, and offer a little bit more than just a logo for it.
Very interesting. That's awesome. Yeah. And I think it's so smart to just really plan ahead and, you know, plan for that recession if that's the case. Cause it's definitely looking like that's going to be the case.
Yeah. It's, you know, it could be the fact that we're dealing with COVID blowback, not to completely derail. It could be COVID blowback. It could be corporate greed. There's some things that factors that this could just be like a faux inflation.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather prepare for it than not. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
The Sell Without Pitching Manifesto is a really great one. The Win Without Pitching Manifesto, sorry, by Blair Inns.
Okay.
It's a really, really great book for creative agencies and advertising agencies to really change the conversation away from a service that you're selling to an idea. And you get a lot less pushback when people are comparing apples to apples of website to website. If you're actually going to have the conversation and sit down with them to explain why you understand their business better. So you are going to build, it's not about a website anymore. It's, they feel seen and understood, and you feel like you're integrating into their team at an idea level. And
yeah,
so connecting at that point, like, in making that your expertise point, it's less about a website. I mean, how many people can build websites? How many people can run Facebook ads? How many people can build logos? So many options that are out there. So differentiating yourself by having an idea and a strategy and connecting with their culture, like, the other stuff becomes easy and you stop getting haggled over, because they realize the value that you're bringing is not just the service, the product, it's the idea. So that's a really great book.
Okay, perfect. And what does your morning routine look like?
Man, my morning routine is incredibly inconsistent. And I would love to stand up here and be like the TikTok CEO, productivity guru. That's like every morning I wake up at 4 a.m. and I stare into my soul with an espresso. It's not that at all.
Well, you have five kids, right?
Yeah, I have five kids and a foster child right now. And we're looking to adopt. And so life is messy and it's real. And I the times I find my periods of peace when I can be and think and execute is, you know, 10 p.m. to like midnight. That's like my time, you know? And I think that I want to make sure that I'm leaving a legacy, and what's important to me is not primarily becoming a millionaire of a big agency. It's being a great dad to the kids that I have and not losing these hours and days that, every single business owner that I talk to, you just like, when I start saying, hey, I have five kids, like immediately this like regret washes over their face. I would say 90% of the time I'm talking to these business owners and people that have really succeeded in their careers and done really well. I'm like, okay, well, what would you do differently when we're talking about kids? And they're like, I'd spend more time with them. I wish I had those years back. Every single one. And so it's like, okay, wow. Well, I'm young, I'm 33. If everybody's saying they were like regret not having that time back, not playing more with their kids, then let's do the 4-day work week. And I'm going to take advantage of that as a CEO. The times that my kids are awake, I'm going to be with them, intentionally connecting with them. And then when they go to bed, then I will hustle. Then I will grind. Then I'll hang out. But for me, that's like 10 p.m. until midnight, 1 a.m. sometimes. But new foster daughter that we have, it's like I've been staying up till 1 to 2 a.m. just with the baby, just to allow my wife to be able to. She's like 1 month old. So new babies, like they wake up every hour and a half. And so both of us were like suffering from a sleep perspective. So I just keep the baby, let her sleep, get a good chunk of uninterrupted sleep. And that gives me time to think and walk and pace. And my morning routine is like, I wake up at like 9 o'clock in the morning because I've been staying up until 1 or 2 and then look at my day and jump into it. But I would say my very, very early morning hours are not my most productive time. It's just kind of catching up on the day and where it's at. But I would say very different morning routine than a lot of other CEOs probably.
Yeah. Well, you got to find what works for you though. So that's interesting. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
There's not. There's some really great CEOs. Like, I'm not like doubting that at all. There's some really great like wealth out there, but most CEOs have made their jobs out of a very specific niche, a very specific industry with a very specific timeline that happened. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that when I'm listening to even really well, like Gary Vaynerchuk or like a bunch of other ones that people follow online and listen to and get hyped about, the solutions that they're offering are very from their own expertise and from what they've seen success for. And I think what you see is a lot of times people will become successful from a single microcosm moment that they built towards. It's not luck, but what caused their success, if I try and take that same thing and I apply it to myself or my employees or my city, like it doesn't work the same way. And I think that people want the same success. So they go, you have success. Oh, I want that success. And they don't realize that they don't have the personality to carry that authentically. They're not that person. So it's like following CEOs to try and grow my business. It feels like marriage books or parenting books where it's like, are these things probably good? Yes. Is this helping my specific relationship that I have with my spouse that's so unique? No. Is this helping my specific child who has a completely different personality than the author's kids? Or like, no, right? Like, so I, like general knowledge, that's great. But what's actually been beneficial for me and my business and my marriage with my kiddos has not been leaning on outside sources, but staring at what I've been given and the puzzle pieces that are on the table and realizing that like, this is my space to move and navigate. These are the pieces and the tools that I have. And I could spend time on Facebook or like LinkedIn articles or Inc.com or other sources, like learning from people that had their success point 10 years ago or 5 years ago and have now leveraged that into a successful book tour and, you know, podcasts and other stuff because they've had that success point. Or I can spend time looking at the pieces I have in front of me and seeing the actual skill sets, strengths, weaknesses that are near me and around me, and spend time learning that. So there's not currently a CEO that I follow or study.
Okay, that's interesting. No, I like that. And what is your favorite online tool?
Reddit. Yeah. And honestly, because it's real feedback from real people in real industries asking real questions and in actual tribal communities of things that they're passionate and important about. So you're talking about from a marketing perspective, like you want to learn about plumbers, you're about to go market to plumbers. There's a plumbing subreddit where you have plumbers that are actually asking questions. They're talking about their fears, their desires, their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations, and they're using tribal language. What I mean by that is like language that only plumbers know. And so it's like, as you adopt marketing communication style and language, if your offers become more tribal, then like, and use the same language authentically, then you have much more like ability to impact and succeed in those efforts because they feel seen and they feel like it's not coming from a weird, hey there, fellow kids. You know,
you're really, speaking their language that they resonate with. Yeah.
And they're giving you that language and they're giving you their fears. They're giving it for free. It's an incredibly valuable tool to understand how they feel and what they're concerned about and what, you know, it allows you to answer questions that for industries, you know, that you wouldn't normally. So I would say Reddit is a really great online tool if you know how to use it.
Okay. Interesting. And then, so last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
To not focus on selling. I think when you're starting a career out, especially if you're starting a business, it's very easy to get caught up with money in and just making a sale, any sale. But people want to work with who they know, they like, and they trust. And people want to work with someone that feels stable and competent. And I think the best way to ensure that is by serving the hell out of them. Like listening to them, actually taking the time. If I come into a business meeting and I'm feeling pressure from bills that are mounting up or payroll that's coming up ahead, and I'm carrying that into a meeting, 100% that client feels that. They feel the pressure for a need to close now instead of an organic relationship and an organic back and forth. And so if I don't bring those things to the table, but instead I'm thinking through asking them, where are you going in the next 5 years? Like, what's actually important to you about this business? What makes you different inside of it? And I'm trying to pull and listen, like really intently listen to what's worked for them in the past and how do they actually reach people and how the services are. I craft a very custom, specific, strategic expression of their company moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I yield as much value as I can for what's worked for them inside of that first discovery meeting that I want them to walk away, even if they don't use me, to have actual things that they would implement in their business that would cause their success. And I'm willing to give it away for free. I'm like the Costco grocery store free samples person, but I know that I have the best little slices of burritos ever. Like, I know it's so good. So I'm not concerned about giving it away because I know as soon as they put it in their mouth and they eat it, they're never going to want to go somewhere else because it's that valuable. It's that good, right?
Yeah.
So giving away as much value as possible and serving them. I think I wish I'd known that right at the very beginning. It's something I've learned over the course of time. People don't respond to sales. They respond to value. And I think you have to listen to know what value to bring.
Caleb, this has been a really, really great conversation. I've really enjoyed all the information you've shared with us today. I think you had so many great tidbits of knowledge and I've really enjoyed picking your brain. So thank you so much for joining us for the show.
Thank you for having me, Julia. This was great.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.